I was born in maybe in November the 11th, 1917, November 26th, 1917. I was born on Center Street at home. Our doctor was Dr. Kallmeyer. He was our family doctor, and he delivered all the kids that we had. I was the fourth boy of seven, and our entire family was seven boys and four girls, 11 of us. And when I was, my dad rebuilt the house just at the time that I was born, built on some extra rooms so we'd have room for everybody. And then when I was young, I went to school at St. Joseph School in Mabee, and St. Joseph Church. I went there for 8 years. I know that the Dominican nuns were our teachers, and I know I spent a lot of time after school. After school, I would have to go over to school and stay there because I acted up a little bit in class, and I'd sit over on the back porch of the nun's home and stay there for an hour or so, and then before I left, she would always bring me out some cookies and milk so that everything would be okay. I don't know why she kept me after school. I think just to be around. So I'd be around with her. We were real good friends, my teacher and I. And those times. Anyway, I went through school here, eighth grade, and then
at home
we had we had 11 children, and my dad and mother made 13, and usually we had some woman was helping my mother at home take care of the house and the kids. And we'd have one big old table in the kitchen. Everybody was sitting at the table. We had 14 people at a time. And we had real good food. My mother was a good cook. She always gave us what we wanted, and usually, because at one time I wouldn't eat steak. I hated steak, and whenever we'd have steak, she would cook me a couple pork chops, and I guess that's why I've been spoiled all my life. Anyway, at night we'd listen to the radio. We had no televisions or anything. We listened to radio and Amos and Andy, and we had on a Saturday night, I think it was, we had a show that was kind of supposed to be a spooky show, and we would listen to that, turn the lights out and listen to that. And the Green Hornet, I think we had at that time. Anyway, we would listen to the radio because no television, no VCRs or anything like that. We did have movies, we would go to the movies sometime, but not too often. When I was a little older, we used to go more often than that. But and at that time, we had the Prohibition was in force. We I think it was during the World War I that the prohibition was voted for. I think when during the time when most of the men were gone to the war, they passed the law. So everything that was done then was illegal, but not homemade stuff, but anything. You couldn't buy anything at the bars or anything like that, at the tavern. But I remember that we used to make homemade wine, my dad did, and we would make homebrew in the basement of the house over there, and I'd help put the caps on the bottles. We had a bottle capper and everything, so that they would have something to drink. And we had one tavern owner that used to sell beer before Prohibition, and he had ran a little bootlegging place in the back. He would sell whiskey, which was brought in from Canada. I know a real close person that used to run whiskey from Canada over to Detroit, and he used to have a speedboat, and he'd bring whiskey over until somebody shot, until the Coast Guard shot at him one time, and I guess he gave up the idea. He thought that was a little risky, so that was done. But the kids used to get into the whiskey. Friends of ours that used to go. We had a family that the tavern owners had about 11 or 12 kids too in his family. So we were all pretty much matched up. One was he'd have one, and my mother would have a baby, and so that all during our years we had these. Both of us were pretty close, and we would stay at his house, and we would stay over at their place, and they would stay at our house. And some of the kids would switch around, you know, we'd pass times like that. And then after school, usually the main thing that we did was play ball. We would have any time we had free time, we'd get the kids together. It'd be two or three or four kids, whatever we could get. We'd go down. We'd be at the ball diamond, play ball, practicing, playing, and that was our main recreation at that time. I know that I'd love to play ball. I know when I got meal time, when my mother wanted us for home for meals, all she had to do was send somebody down to the ball diamond, and she knew we'd be there. So that was about the most entertainment that we had. We used to play games, kid games, tag, hide and seek, hide and run around all over town, hiding, running, hiding, and having somebody looking for it. This was early in the evening, usually, when it got still, when it just about got dark, till it got dark, and then we'd highball home. So, my dad had ran a mill, an elevator. People hauled the grain in, he bought the grain. He sold coal, because that time most farmers or most people used coal and wood for heat. Practically everything was coal and wood. We never used fuel oil. We never had fuel oil at that time for heating, or gas or natural gas or anything like that. We had coal and wood. So he sold coal, and during a depression, which was in, 30s, early 30s, my dad, I don't think that us kids realized that there was a depression because we always had plenty to eat and everything. Because my dad, he used to get his food from the grocery store, which was run by his brother, Leonard, and meat from his another brother, Luke. He had a meat market, so we would get our food, never pay for nothing. When we wanted something, we'd go uptown and get it. They'd put it on the bill. And at the end of the year, my dad would get together with his brothers and figure out who owed who what and settle up that way. So money didn't change hands too much.
What about the farmers?
Farmers during that time were really had a tough time because I remember a man I used to work with later on used to tell me when times were tough, he had to sell pigs and hogs for a penny a pound and had to take them all the way to Monroe, deliver them to Monroe in a wagon. And so you see that money was, there was no such a thing as having any money. They just, everybody didn't have nothing. And they traded a lot of things. A lot of times we'd get probably eggs. My dad would get eggs for some flour or something, and people would bring in eggs or want to sell him some eggs so they could buy flour from him, because he had a flour mill. We made flour there, and pancake flour, and would grind their corn and stuff up for feed for the cows and for the cattle, and in the mill. And then he would buy the grain he didn't use to feed, and ship it out and sell it, buy coal. So he did real well, but during the Depression, money was so scarce that he had his troubles too. I know that he had, when I found out later on in late years, that during he was a strong believer in insurance, and he had a lot of insurance on himself. And during the Depression, the only place he could get any money, the banks closed up here, and nobody could get anything out of the banks because they just closed them up. And my dad, the only place he could get money for operating was borrowing on his insurance. So he had probably $100,000 worth of insurance maybe on himself. And when he died really young, 54 years old when he died. And I know he had probably half of his insurance borrowed on, so that it was only worth probably half of what would have been normally. But it tided him over during the bad times anyway. So it was more important then than it was to have it after he died.
Did you graduate?
Well, I don't know. We graduated. I went through the eighth grade, and then after we graduated, Father Bertram, our pastor at that time, I was an altar boy, had been an altar boy for several years, and he talked to some of us and tried to get us interested in going to Sacred Heart Seminary to become priests. And it sounded like it was a good idea at the time, so I went, and another friend of mine went, Edward Wurstein, and so wasn't so bad. We went together. And we were boarding students. We didn't, we couldn't be day school pupils because we lived out here and the school was in Detroit. So we were boarding there. So I boarded, I stayed in school there for 5 years. And my, it was all right, but my my partner who went in with me, he got homesick. So he had to come home. They wouldn't, he wouldn't stay any longer, so I was there alone. Well, with a lot of other students, but I was the only one from, I was the only one that, from this area. Later on, during my time there, I was, had a lot of time, a lot of free time after classes because after the day students went home, we had free time to play. We had games. We played softball, baseball, tennis, and handball, and basketball. Basketball, I didn't have any experience with basketball or a lot of these other games before we left here because we had no facilities here at school. But at the first year in school, I played well. I went out for the basketball team, and I couldn't make the team because I didn't know nothing about it. So I decided that I was going to find out about it. So after school, I'd get a ball from our equipment room, and I'd go into the gym, and I'd dribble and shoot baskets all afternoon until, and sometimes after supper when I didn't have any studies that I had to do. When I got my schoolwork all done, I would go in there and shoot until we had Vespers and go to church, and then we'd go to bed. Of course, we always went to bed about 9 o'clock or so. I imagine it was quite early anyway. But at that time, I guess we were ready for it. Got up early and went to church every morning. So I got my church going in early. So after the first year I played basketball, after I couldn't make the team, I was pretty disappointed I couldn't play good enough to get on a team. So I practiced and practiced and practiced. Second year, I made our team. And then after that, we had one team that represented the whole school. Our school consisted of 4 years of high school and 4 years of college. So we had eight grades there. And after the second year, when I got playing ball, I made the school team, which was supposed to be the best players from the entire school. So I learned how to play pretty good, quite fast. But I enjoyed it. I liked it. And we had some good coaches. I had a coach from Ann Arbor, Angelo Bertoni was one from Monroe, from Ann Arbor, and we had I had another coach from Detroit, Redford Parish in Detroit. His name was Ford. So we played the outside teams would come in to play at the seminary because we couldn't go out on the road and play. They would come and play with us. So one year when Redford was won the championship in Catholic schools in Detroit, well, they wanted to play. Our coach got them to come over and play ball with us. So he wanted us to beat him, and we did. We won. He told us we were as good as they were, so we won the ball game and tickled him pretty much.
How long were you in
school? I went there for 5 years, and At that time, I come home in 1930, I would imagine it would have been in the 1936 or 7, I got out of school. And I was gonna go back, I planned on going back to school, and of course I got the idea that I discovered that girls were quite enjoyable entertainment too, so I got a little thinking that maybe being a priest wasn't for me, so. And then the clincher was, I was going up to uptown one day through the alley right between right next to our house, a hook rattler had a hardware store and farm implements and everything, and I was going through, they were setting up some farm equipment, and he asked me, he said, you're interested in a job? And I told him, yeah, I guess so. I got a job there in 1937 in the fall, and started working there, and then I never did go back to school. So I ended up working there at the hardware for 40 years, wasn't it? 35, 40 years.
What did you do?
We had regular hardware, a big hardware store, and then we sold farm implements to the farmers. We sold fertilizer. I hauled fertilizer, and we handled, shipped fertilizer and delivered fertilizer. I bought, I was in the store, took care of waiting on customers and things, and one of the owners, Clement Grove Hochrattle, they owned the building and business, and Grover was an accountant. He was a little fella. He was an accountant, and he showed me how to take care of the books, and I helped him. And then after he got sick, and he got out of the business entirely, and Clem took it over alone. And I had to take over the bookwork then, of course. And then in 1944, I was given exemptions from going to service for several times because of our farmers depended on us for materials, and I was considered important enough to stay home to not to go to war. So Mr. O'Connell, Clem always went in and to the draft board and got me a suspension, so I didn't have to go till 1944. They finally got down to the bottom of the barrel, I guess, and they. So me and my brother Eugene, we had to go in. But just before we left, they dropped the age limit down so that he didn't have to go. And I had to go. And I only went for 6 months. Because during the time I was in there, 1944 to 1945, the war in Germany was over. So I had three children by that time. So when they figured out how many dependents, how many points you had, they would, if you had enough points, you were entitled to go home or be discharged. So they we had when I was in the service, we had test people that were interested in becoming officers, you know, officers training. If you passed on the test, if you had a high enough grade, you were entitled to go to officers training. and go there until after we and we had officers training tests, so I took the test, and when they put up the scores, I was the second one in our battalion, second highest, so I had an opportunity to go to officers training. But at that time, I had enough points to get out of the Army. So it was a question of whether I wanted to go home or go to training. They told me if I took the officers training, and they spent the money on me to train me to be an officer, I had to stay in the service for a year in Germany, go to Germany for a year. I'm sorry I never did it, you know. It would have been a great thing. And I'd gone over there as an officer and stayed a year and got out. But I said no, because I had two kids at home, and Denny was born while I was in the service, and I had never seen him yet. So I said no. I said, just get me out of here, so I'm going home. So that ended my Army. I went to Camp Fan in Texas. We had our basic training down there. Went to Detroit, was inducted in Detroit. We went to Chicago, and then from Chicago we went on a train to Texas and stayed there. And I was discharged in Texas from Camp Fanning. So that was the end of my service. I had nothing. I went through the, we had completed our training and was just waiting for assignment when they gave me my discharge, so I came on home.
What did you do when you got back?
Well, after I got back home, I went back to work at the hardware, and that was a mistake. I should have gone to plan or did something else, because at that time I wasn't making any money there, and everybody else was making a fortune. Yeah. Anyway, I worked at the hardware, went back to the hardware store, and started working there. My wife was disappointed that I didn't leave and go to the factory or something where they were working and making big money comparatively, you know. And if I would have gone there, I would have gotten my benefits, retirement benefits and everything else like I should have done. But I worked there at the hardware and kept on working there till I finally he sold out. They always said, we're going to take care of you, which is is a great thing, you know. They take care of you, all right. You work all your life, and then when they get ready to go out of business, you're just left with nothing. So I went to Ford's. I got a job at Ford's, and I was lucky there. Because I had a good job at Ford, and I worked there for about 8 years. Of course, the automobile plant at that time wasn't like the old time Model T's or anything. I remember the Model T's and the Model A cars, but. At that time, the cars were much newer, of course. And
what do you remember about the Model T?
Oh, I drove them. I drove Model T's. They had a lot of people had them. But when I was old enough to drive, we weren't driving Model T's anymore. My dad, he used to drive Oldsmobile. Well, we had a Joe Little, cousin used to have a car dealer. He used to sell Hudson and Essex and maybe. And he used to buy Essex a few times and Hudson's. But mostly he was, he would get oldsmobiles for him because this dealer could get any car you wanted. If you wanted an oldsmobile, he'd get you an oldsmobile. If you wanted something else, he'd get you something else. And so my dad had a deal with him where every year he'd go in and trade his car in for a new one. He'd drive an Oldsmobile for a year, and when the new models come out, he'd order a new one. And it cost him $500 every year for a new car. That's all it cost. That was the deal. So, we had other people that would do the same thing. A doctor that we used to have here would do the same thing. He'd get one every year. I worked at Ford's for 7 or 8, 9 years, I guess. Oh, at first it was pretty rough on the assembly line, but then I got had a friend in there that wanted to get me in as a crib attendant and showed how the things work. In the factories was like it is every place else. If you got the friends and you got the place to go, you can do most anything. So he said, I told him I didn't have enough seniority. So he said, well, we'll fix that. He said, I have this man here that's been here for 30 years. There's no way in the world he could do the job. So he can sign the bidding on the job, and you sign the bidding on the job. So after we look at him, if he's not able to do the job, I can pick anybody else on the list. So I got the job. That's the way that worked. So, but after I worked there for a while, then I left and I went had a couple other jobs. I worked at Woodall Industries and C&B Automotive for a while, several years at each place, and also I had a paper route for about 18 years, my wife and I. And we kept that until she died, and I kept that. So after all those jobs, I finally retired and started babysitting for my grandkids. And after they get grown up, I think I've had it for the rest of my time. So the kids are going to school next year full time, so I won't have no more kids to watch. So I'll be retired. Good. That's it, I guess.